The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Mayor Mike Bloomberg. Remember to dial 311 for all New York City government services and information.
You're listening to 91.5 WNYE FM and HD1 New York.
The opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the views of NYC Media Group, its management, or any entity affiliated with either.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Broadcasting live and video streaming live from our studios in the Upper West Side of Manhattan. If you'd like to watch this program, just go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryKnoll.com. Today we have a lot to share. My guest in the second part of our program will be Martin Barnes. He's in France. We're going to go there and talk about why people should not have an HIV antibody test, why they should reconsider taking the drugs that were given to those people who are diagnosed with HIV, who are the latest scientists to come on board those challenging the dogma of the current war on AIDS. So AIDS, the science, the testing, the myth, the truth. Very important program. You won't want to miss that. Commentary today from Robert Scheer from Truthdig on Bill Clinton's legacy of denial. In studio in New York City also is Elizabeth, who reads the mail from Ask Gary at GaryKnoll.com. And Elizabeth, yesterday, you remember, I said that Business Week or Newsweek, one of them, had a cover story of Bill Clinton giving 14 reasons of how 14 ways that we can increase jobs, right?
Yes.
And I said the audacity of a man who's caused America to lose about 6 to 8 million jobs because of his legislation. Why choose him?
Right.
You know, and today, Robert Scheer's answering that. So I'm going to give this Bill Clinton's legacy of denial and then ask you to call in on our issue segment of our program and share your points of view. And then we've been told that our nuclear facilities in the United States, especially in Dim Point, just 22 miles north of New York City on the Hudson River, these are safe. There's no leaks, no problems, no harm, and therefore not to panic. Well, they said the same thing about the Fukushima plant in Japan. Nuclear nightmare worsens. From Op-Ed News from Joe Giambrone. And from Just Dawn, AP, national writer, tritium leaks found at many nuclear facilities in the United States. So we've been lied to. If we've been lied to about these leaks, what else have we not been given the truth on? I'll deal with that. Needless to say, we have a lot to share, and we're looking forward to empowering you during this hour. Again, we look at issues that are not covered in the mainstream media or even the official non-mainstream, such as Fox or MSNBC. Let's begin. If you walk down any street in America, you would find that at least 50% of the people walking by you are overweight. If you went to Disney World, it'd probably be closer to 90%. Just go to a beach and see how many people are overweight. Here's the latest on why you should be concerned. This is published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology, based upon the American Academy of Neurology's research, and similar research was reported in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. And what it says is this. If you're middle-aged, meaning anywhere from, let's say, 35 to 50, that's middle-aged now, and you're overweight, you're running very serious risks. Here's what they say, and I'll quote this. New research released the results of a study showing that being overweight or obese in midlife significantly increases the risk of developing dementia, Alzheimer's, and other conditions. Right now, there's over 1.6 billion people who are overweight or at risk around the world. In the United States, we have over 53% of Americans who are overweight or obese. Now, there's three ways of dealing with this. They're relatively easy. One, exercise. If the average American were to power walk or jog 1 hour a day, 6 days a week, and then do some resistance exercising, or power biking, meaning you put it in your hardest, most resistant gear, and bike for an hour. A skipping rope, very good for you. Swimming or running in a pool, where it's called water jogging, where it's good for people who are overweight and people with inflamed joints because there's no pain in the joint. The water is creating a buoyancy, but it's still good. That's one way. Second, only eat two meals a day and have small snacks that are high quality, nutrient dense, but calorie light fruits, or have something like celery with a nice dip on it that's non-colorigenic. Also have a good liquid breakfast, a protein shake with omega fatty acids, coconut oil, good fibers from fruits like blueberries, blackberries, strawberries. Those are excellent, low glycemic, low sugar. All the berries are great. And there are about 15 different types of berry commonly out there that you can consume. And then have your main meal in the early afternoon, what we now call lunch. Have that as your main meal, and your light meal in the evening, like a small pasta or a nice a soup or a big salad in the evening. And stop the snacking on sugary junk foods. Within 6 months, we would be bringing our obesity and overweight epidemic into a normal state and save a lot of lives. Also, there comes time when you have to realize that if you're watching television all the time or on your computer all the time, they both have the same manifestation. First, you're getting pulsed with electromagnetic pulses, which are bad for you. Secondly, you are not exercising. The body needs exercise. You need to get up and move those muscles. Now, one thing you can do, and this is published in the journal Nutrition, you can take the omega-3 fatty acids. They say on this study that it's good for your heart and your brain, and also there's a dangerous chemical in the body called homocysteine. When that's elevated, you're at greater risk of having a heart attack or stroke. Omega-3 fatty acids help bring down the risk of homocysteine. Simply stated in lay language, if you want to have a less risk of a heart attack or stroke, take 2,000 milligrams a day of omega-3 fatty acids. Now, for those of you who want to do a lot more for your heart, a good article that's just come out shows that pycnogenol and coenzyme Q10 taken together can help stable heart failure patients as an adjunctive therapy. So if it can help people that already are having a problem with their heart, we know that coenzyme Q10 and pycnogenol will help high blood pressure, lower your pulse rate, and help you with respiratory conditions. All of those are important. It also improves endothelial function and blood flow, meaning visualize this. Visualize a brand new hose, water hose. It's flexible. It's soft. Now leave it out in the sun for 3 months and it's hard and cracked. That's the difference between good arteries and veins, soft and pliable, and bad arteries and veins, where the epithelial tissue, the lining, is now hardened, and hence we have hardening of the arteries. And hardening of the arteries, arterial sclerosis, leads to heart attacks. So by taking, and I'm going to suggest 500 milligrams of coenzyme Q10, 50 milligrams of NADH, and 200 milligrams of pycnogenol, pycnogenol, pig, pick, nodge, and all. Well, here's one wise man. He tried frankincense for arthritis, and it worked. This is from the University of Cardiff, and the scientists there found that this age-old biblical and natural folk remedy, frankincense, has the ability to relieve pain. Quote, this is from a study done at Cardiff University School of Biosciences, and it says, the search for new ways of relieving the symptoms of inflammatory arthritis and osteoarthritis is a long and difficult one. The southwest of England and Wales has a long-standing connection with the Somali community, who have used extracts of frankincense as a traditional herbal remedy for arthritic conditions. What our research is focused on is whether and how these extracts can help alleviate the inflammation that causes pain. And then they found out it did. It worked. So now add to your home healthcare chest frankincense. You can buy it in any health food store if you have arthritis. And finally, blueberries can help build strong bones. This is from Science Daily. This was researched by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Arkansas Children's Nutrition Center and published in Journal of Bone and Mineral Research. It showed that compounds, chemicals in blueberries, can have a powerful effect on formation of strong, healthy bones. And that's crucial. Now, we know that boron at about 5 milligrams, manganese at 10 milligrams, vitamin K2 at 5 milligrams, also would be vitamin D at 3,000 units, calcium magnesium from citrate at 800 milligrams. That's a perfect formula for remineralization of your bones or just keeping your bones strong. Add into that now blueberries. And I know that a lot of you are getting your blueberries because I know that you're getting it from your compounding powders, which is good. I'm Gary Knoll. I'm going to give you our little, today it's a short, Robert Shear posting on an issue, and then ask you to call in, then we'll take a break. Quote, does Bill Clinton still not grasp that the current economic crisis is in large measure his legacy? Obviously, that's the case, or he wouldn't have had the timidity to write a 14-point memo for Newsweek on how to fix the economy that never once refers to the home mortgage collapse and other manifestations of Wall Street greed that he enabled as president. Endorsing the Republican agenda, financial industry deregulation, reversing the New Deal safeguards, President Clinton pursued policies that in the long run created more damage to the American economy than any other president since Herbert Hoover, whose tenure is linked to the Great Depression. Now, in his Newsweek piece, Clinton has the effrontery to once again revive his 1992 campaign mantra, "It's the economy, stupid," as the article title, without any sense of irony, let alone accountability. But that's always been this man's special gift, to rise above and indeed benefit from the messes he created. His list of safe nostrums, painting tar surface roofs white and seeking more efficient solar and battery production. Yeah, good. Conceding that the bailout banks are sitting on $2 trillion that they won't lend that we, the taxpayer, gave them, Clinton offers not a word about mortgage relief for swindled homeowners. with an all-time high of 44 million Americans living below the poverty line. Clinton once again brags of his success in ending the federal welfare program. There's only a one-sentence reference in the Clinton article to the era of financial greed. Clinton signed off on the reversal of the Glass-Steagall Act, the legislative jewel of the Franklin Roosevelt administration, designed to prevent financial institutions from getting too big to fail. In signing the Financial Services Modernization Act, which broke down the barrier between high-rolling Wall Street investment firms and consumer banks carrying the deposits of ordinary folk, Bill Clinton gushed in 1999, quote, "Over the past 7 years, we have tried to modernize the economy, and today what we are doing is modernizing the financial services industry, tearing down those antiquated laws and granting banks significant new authority," unquote. The first beneficiary of that legislation by Clinton was Citigroup, a corporation that resulted from a merger that would have been banned by Glass-Steagall. Upon signing the law, Clinton handed one of the pens he used to a beaming Sandy Weill, Citigroup CEO and a close friend and financial supporter of the president. Clinton's Treasury Secretary, Robert Rubin, then went off to a $15 million a year executive position at Citigroup, and was in key positions there when the bank made those toxic derivative packages that would have forced it into bankruptcy had the U.S. taxpayers not bailed the bank out. So much for the modernizing that Clinton had bragged about. A year later, a variation of that same word appeared in the title of the Commodity Futures Modernization Act, which Clinton signed and which exempted from government regulation all of the collateralized debt obligations and credit default swaps that would later prove so toxic. That legislation led to the explosion of the market in unregulated mortgage-based securities, the key source of the financial sector deal-making that Clinton now bemoans. In his memoir, Clinton pays tribute to Rubin as, quote, "the best and most important Treasury Secretary since Alexander Hamilton." Yeah, really? Well, is that the same Rubin that joined Goldman Sachs, then left there to go to Citigroup, and in the way, created legislation that allowed them to make gazillions? As with so much in the Clinton record, the former president remains in deep denial over having any culpability for his misdeeds. In his 1,000-page memoir, there is no reference to the above-mentioned radical deregulation of the economy that he presided over. As evidenced by his Newsweek article, the man has long been convinced there is no problem or contradiction of his that cannot be simply plastered over with blather. Sadly, he may be right. End quote. So here's what this means in lay language. Think of how many people were willing to vote for Hillary Clinton because they like Bill Clinton. One man resigned recently, Wiener, for posting stupid pictures in his underwear and or naked on the web. Fine, that's who he is. He shouldn't have been in office, but then again, none of the people I believe should be in office. We don't have a real populist in office. We don't have just decent human beings in office. Clinton actually was having affairs with over 40 women, but he lied about it and he stayed in office. Now, this is a man that Wiener goes to for advice. This is a man that now is enshrined by the Democrats and liberals as one of the most important populist presidents. Populist in what way? He caused NAFTA to be passed. The unions lost jobs by the millions. The World Trade Organization. It's just amazing to me that we refuse to see the truth of something. Yet if he ran for president today, he would get elected again. I'm not sure he would run as a Democrat. I don't think Barack Obama should run as Democrat. I think they should both run as Republicans, since virtually everything they do is pro-corporation. So really, we shouldn't have Democrat and Republican. We should just have pro-corporation or anti-corporation. It would be far more honest. I'm Gary Noll. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear yours. Call us now at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Head over, I've been like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. We have a lot to share, including our guest, your calls, which I'm looking forward to hearing from you at 888-874-4888. And Elizabeth's going to go to your mail here in a moment. But we haven't had a special in 2 weeks, and so this is the special that we're up to. That special, I'm going to ask our engineer to turn down the mic. We got too much buzz there. Thank you. We've taken our two bestsellers, Green Stuff and Greens and Grains. This is the new and improved Green Stuff. And for those of you who may not be aware of what I'm talking about, one of my joys in life is inventing. I love to create solutions for problems. And creating a product that has so much power, that is high in all natural and raw ingredients, 20 different vegetables and loads of phytonutrients, organic spirulina, the sea algae and barley grass that's high in fiber, and then it's kicking off with the most delicious aroma and taste, a wonderful cherry pineapple of taste and smell. It's just absolutely perfect. And then you have the high 10,000 ORAC per serving, which means that you're flooding the body with protective antioxidants. And yet it's great for diabetics. It only has 40 calories per serving. And then it also has a Circle K kosher for our Jewish that's our observant. But listen to the ingredients that you're getting in this. And this makes it really special. Top of the list, and we're talking about big amounts, apple pectin, and then barley grass juice, and carrot juice, and spinach, chlorella, spirulina, celery, cauliflower, cabbage, broccoli, kale, oat beta-glucan, asparagus, parsley, radish, broccoli sprouts, onions, and collard greens. That's in one of them, Green Stuff. Now, in Greens and Grains, since I couldn't put everything in one and have adequate amounts to really be at the level to make a difference in your body, I made two products, but they're not duplicated. In Greens and Grains, I'm adding organic flaxseed and pumpkin and alfalfa leaf and oat grass and green kamut and chia seed and sea vegetables, 5 different sea vegetables, ones you haven't heard of before, calerpera and palmaria palmato and macrocytis, alaria, things that you didn't know existed, laminaria japonica and echolonia. Never heard of them? Well, you should, because these are the ones that I've chosen to go into Greens and Grains because I want you to have healthy sea vegetables. Then ginseng, sprouted quinoa, sprouted kamut, sprouted amaranth, sprouted spelt, all gluten-free, fennel, yucca, pineapple enzymes, bromelain, ginger root, and 8 billion non-dairy acidophilus from 5 different blends, also in a wonderful cherry pineapple natural flavor. Big jars, great for you. I don't know anything else you could possibly do that would give your body what it needs in the way of chlorophyll, phytonutrients, probiotics, all good high fibers, protective ORAC antioxidant values, and this pure, this potent, both kosher, and get this, today only. Call in our number at 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, and you get an enormous discount. How much so? We've never offered this much before. You're going to save $99. How about that? A tremendous savings. All right? I think I'm right there. Excuse me. You are saving $70. You're saving $70. These are the new and improved Green Stuff and Greens and Grains. You're talking about, what are you talking about? 48 different items. Wow. In good amounts. So call now. That's your special, 877-627-5065. Before we go over to our guest, which will happen in about 14 minutes from now, we're going to say hello to people who've called in. And I really enjoy people calling in and sharing their points of view on our show every day. And if you miss a show, go to the archives. By the way, I started a new program. It's called the Progressive Commentary Hour. and it deals with in-depth commentaries that I would not, in the normal course of a program, have time to share. And it's on Monday nights at 7 to 8 p.m., but if you miss it, go to the archives, it's there, and you can listen to the full show. And I have one person to interview on that commentary. So this week I had a commentary about the Federal Reserve, our financial system, what's wrong with what's happening, what is likely to happen in the United States with our currency and gold and silver, and Professor Michael Hudson, in my opinion, one of the three smartest economists in the world, was my guest. So that's Progressive Radio Network's new Progressive Commentary Hour. Let's say hello to Bill in Long Island. Hi, Bill.
Yes. Hi, Gary. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Very well. Very long time listener. I don't know, maybe 25 years. Never spoke to you, though. But what I really wanted to do today was thank you and one of your guests that you had on a long time ago by the name of Ralph Moss.
Sure.
Wrote a book about questioning chemotherapy.
Yes.
Which really resulted in saving my father's life. It was nothing short of amazing. My father was 80 years old, was diagnosed with a stage 4 throat cancer, inoperable. I didn't agree with the diagnosis. Hearing you in the background, questioning everything, I did my own research and found out that the treatment that they were recommending was going to have absolutely no effect on my father's cancer. And we opted for something else. This is 5 years ago. They gave my father 6 months to live. He's 85 now, doing great.
Bill, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you very much for calling in and sharing that with us.
Thanks.
Tom from Long Island. Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
Good.
Good. Yeah, I wanted to ask you, I'm concerned about the voting machines because they've been privatized and fiasco in Florida and they're electronic. And secondly, I was wondering what you think about Ralph Nader or who might be, you know, coming out of the pack as far as those progressive libertarian type people go.
Okay, first we have to understand that no libertarian is going to do well until they understand the limitations of being a libertarian. A Ron Paul libertarian has to clean up their act. What do I mean by that? Yes, he would get us out of all of our wars. Yes, he would close down all those military bases that we do not need and do not support our security. Yes, he would go in and cut back the military-industrial complex. And yes, he would stop these major corporations from getting $13 trillion to keep them afloat and give them absolute control over their destiny, at the same time giving the average person nothing. Those are all good, and I support that. Yes, he is a strict constitutionalist, and I support that. What I do not support is that people who are behind on their mortgages, you should allow the market to dictate. The market has never dictated because we've never had a legitimate and honest market. The market is based upon trust, trusts and monopolies. It's based upon getting trusts and monopolies by manipulating the value of companies and also by being able to take enormous amounts of debt and then manipulating that. So you can buy a company with money you got for zero, and then now you own a company that you add into the balance sheet of yours, and it makes it look like you're much wealthier than what you actually are. Also, I believe that the libertarians must understand that until such time that your policies and your mindset respect the fact that we are not just a capitalist society. We are individuals, more often than not, who are adaptive, supportive of the vast majority of Americans, and therefore they are part of that support system. They don't make policies. They are not opinion leaders. They simply are there to help like worker bees. Therefore, you must take into account at a spiritual and humanistic level their needs, like universal health care and Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security. These are essential for them. Ron Paul does not have that humanistic bent, and therefore he is not willing to see the weakness within the current humanistic system. But if you took the best principles of libertarianism, and you took the best principles of the Green Party and the progressive conservatives and the progressive liberals, then you have something that is viable. There are about 45 million people who believe in those principles I just shared. The trouble is they're not official, and Ralph Nader is a good person who would be the best possible president, but he won't get elected because people don't feel comfortable outside of their existing paradigms. So even if the people voting for that they're voting for will not do a good job and will betray them, they feel more comfortable complaining about the person not giving them what they promised than someone like Ralph Nader, who would but would challenge their belief systems. At the end of the day, we are motivated to change based upon being able to release the grip that a belief system has had on us, because our reality comes from our perception. Our perceptions, more often than not, are based upon illusions, carefully crafted illusions, manufacturing consent illusions. And that's the danger of it. And thank you for your call. We're going to go to Luann Panessi, who has just called in. Hi, Luann.
Hey, Gary. I have Luann, to tell you.
Before you talk there, the latest study, a new study, yields some surprising results. This is according to the latest report, quote, from New York. As lawmakers in New York clashed over legalizing gay marriage, a new study revealed that well over 70% of existing marriages may already be gay. The study conducted by Dr. Davis Longston of the Marital Behavioral Institute at the University of Minnesota confirmed that many social scientists have long suspected that within the first 5 years of marriages, most men become, for all intents and purposes, gay. Quote, soon after marrying, most men stop hitting on women and start shopping for furniture, Dr. Longston said. Scientifically speaking, any man shopping for furniture is gay. Within 10 years of marriage, he added, a significant number of married men stop having sex with women altogether. Quote, there's only one way to describe someone who does not have sex with women, does not hit on women, and spends his free time shopping for furniture. That word, to be scientifically about it, is gay. So I thought that that was important we share that. Elsewhere, by the way, in a 6-3 decision this morning, the Supreme Court asked Chief Justices Kagan, Ginsburg, and Stoudemire to make them coffee. Now,
Gary.
Yes.
Gary.
Yeah, Luann.
Talk about something very serious.
I got one more thing, Luann. This is serious. This is important. This is true. There's this woman, I'm going to guess she's 80 years old, but her picture's up on the internet. I just saw this. It says, in a trial, a southern small-town prosecuting attorney called his first witness, a grandmotherly, elderly woman named Sarah, to the stand. He approached her and asked, Mrs. Jones, do you know me? And she responded, why, yes, I know you. I've known you all your life. You're Mr. Williams. I've known you since you were a boy. And frankly, you've been a big disappointment to me. You lie, you cheat on your wife, and you manipulate people and talk about them behind their backs. You think you're a big shot when you haven't had the brains to realize that you'll never amount to anything other than a two-bit paper pusher. Yes, I know you. Well, the lawyer was stunned. Not knowing what else to do, he pointed across the room and asked, Miss Jones, do you know the defense attorney? And again she replied, why, yes, I do. I've known Mr. Bradley since he was a youngster. He's lazy, bigoted, and he has a drinking problem. He can't build a normal relationship with anyone, and his law practice is one of the worst in the entire state, not to mention the fact he cheated on his wife with three different women. One of them was your wife. Yes, I know him. Well, the defense attorney nearly died. The judge asked both counselors to approach the bench and very quietly said, if either of you idiots ask her if she knows me, I'll send you both to the electric chair. So, all right, now it's your turn.
All right. Thank you for that. I wanted to let you know that since the show you did on sustainable living, I've been inundated with people over the internet and by phone with inquiries about the homesteading project. So some people kind of have this, I guess, like a romanticized notion that this is going to be, you know, I'm just going to show up at Gary's homestead and live off the land. People have some very interesting interpretations. And what I thought would be interesting is if you could kind of go over with us how you're planning on getting this set up, what kind of is there some kind of a transition program where we're going to start up one way and then evolve into the village, the eco-village, or are you going to have straight homesteading? There are some people that would like to rent space from you and just carry on with their lives but be in the area that you're in. I've got people with RVs that would love to kind of come and pass through and spend some time learning about either crafts or sprouting or organic growing and then move on. So, and then of course a whole bunch of people are asking me, are you ever going to have a wellness center again and will it be on that at that location? So I wonder if you could address some of those things real quick.
Okay, it has to be quick because we're running into my guest and Elizabeth's question. Here's the issue. It is my belief that for multiple reasons, millions of Americans should be and are looking forward to a transition in their life. Let's call this the transitional movement, not the homesteading movement. They want to go from where they're at. For example, they might have been retired on a pension, but still young and vital and healthy, and want to enter the next part of their life, but being more off the grid and more self-sustaining, more organic than they were before. There are people of all walks of life who have trades and skills, and they're saying, okay, I want to do more than just be in a city or suburban or urban environment. This gives them that opportunity. In the environment that I'm envisioning, in fact, the one that I'll be purchasing probably in the next week, I'm doing it in stages. Visualize a curve. And I'm not going to do everything at once because what if I build it and nobody comes? I mean, you have to be aware of that. So I'm going to build it in segments. But the first thing I have is natural beauty. That's what took me 8,000 viewings of different places, looking all over the world to find the right places, and I found that. The beauty is just stunning. 8 lakes all interconnected, pristine, pure, hidden from the world, close enough to a city, yet not accessible. No one would ever find this. And deep Jurassic water, rich soil, unpolluted, and it was a golf course, not sprayed. So I'm starting off, I'm going to have my first stage is going to be homesteaders, meaning people who have mastered a craft, a skill, that can be making something, maybe breads or tofu ice cream, whatever it may be, and then being able to sell that to local farmers markets or, and in time I'm going to set up a farmers market right on the property. In other words, virtually everything you see right now at any farmers market in America I can create, except I wouldn't use meat or dairy because it's all vegan. But then I'm also going to have the first holistic addiction counseling in America, limited to no more than 5 people with a PhD, holistic PhD therapy, a regular graduated 4-point average from Albert Einstein School of Medicine that will help people, whether it's eating disorders, alcohol, weight, anything. So I'm going to combine that with the beauty of it. Now, then I'm going to have people will enjoy golf, boating, a track, a indoor-outdoor pool, a spa, gourmet cooking school for cooking classes, yoga meditation on the lake in a special lodge that overlooks one of the big lakes, and health counseling with holistic health counseling with registered dietitians and others. That's the first stage. The second stage, if there's enough interest in this, and oh, by the way, all off the grid. Electric is going to be gone. There'll be solar, wind, water, and natural gas. Then greenhouses and gardens and hydroponic. The newest, I've invented a new form of hydroponic. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to film it and show people, but it will triple the amount of produce a person can get and much quicker based upon my new inventions. But I'm going to do a lot of good, exciting stuff with gardening. Then that's the first stage. All that will happen within the first 6 months. The second 6 months, if there is interest, if people show, then I'll put in an RV, but not like a regular RV, but this would be like a holistic environment. So it doesn't look like a trailer park, but at one end of the property around a lake, they will have beautiful places and be able to bring their recreational vehicles, but enjoy all the facilities. The third will be, if there's still interest, I will then build a gigantic, all-natural, beautiful villa, 18th century style, where people can come and just rent space and live there for a month at a time, indefinitely. And then I'm building an old Wild West town where each of the stores becomes an artist in residence. Maybe a glassblower, weaver, a baker, whatever it is. But you would think you're in an old Wild West town in an artisan's village. So those are the stages I'm doing it. And it will happen because forget the solar flares and forget what could happen, the cataclysm, if one of those solar flares hits America and we're not prepared with the surge protectors, which we could be protected. It didn't have to happen, doesn't have to happen, but it doesn't mean we have the political will. If you look at Katrina and the Corps of Engineers lying about the protection of the levees, and you look at all the catastrophes, almost always people are behind the catastrophe, not in front of it to prevent it. Now, Luann, I got to go, so do this. Take this, you called me and you interrupt my show, so you be responsible. By the way, do we have a house support group tonight? Is it tonight or next Wednesday?
We have what? House support group is Saturdays.
Oh, it's Saturday. Okay, good. All right. Good. So then what I want you to do is if anyone is interested in participating at whatever level they're choosing to participate, they should call you, not me. All right? Because
okay.
And then you can screen people and see what they're interested in. Because if I don't find enough people interested in coming down and renting space and living there and enjoying all these facilities, then I just won't build that part.
I'll interrupt your show again and I'll let you know who's calling me.
No, you won't.
This is your audience, Gary. They want this information and that's why I'm here.
I understand that. But we also want to understand that I believe that eco-villages are on a scale of 1 to 100, only a 2. It is the quality of what you're offering in that environment. It is the quality of people wanting to change their life, have a quality of life that they're not going to have in the future. I predict, and I hope I'm wrong, I would love to be wrong on this, but I predict it's social chaos and social breakdown in the next 3 years because of those 100 million Americans who have been left out, left behind on everything. And therefore, as Gerald Cervantes said, when you have nothing to lose, you lose it. Then see how fun it is to live in the suburbs when gangs are going rampant and civil unrest is rampant. Then people say, oh, my God, should have paid attention. I guess I just waited too long. That's like watching Katrina. Give your number out, Luann.
Okay. My home office is 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198, or they can email me at whnn@aol.com. WHNN, William Harry Nancy Nancy, @aol.com, and I'll start the interviews.
All right, because I'm going to actually personally interview people for the different places. No one will be able to come who's not interviewed because I only want positive energy in that environment. And that's that. All right, but this will be, in my opinion, the most beautiful, all-inclusive, transitional homesteading environment in the world, and I'm going to be filming every step of it so other people in other countries and other parts of America can get an idea of what they could do in different scales and different ways. But if anyone thinks that homesteading or farming, if they're going to do that part, that's only one part, is easy. They just, you know, dig a hole and throw some seeds in the ground. It is not. Homesteading and farming is tough, and I don't want to see people running out and buying a farm and then realizing, oh, my God, why didn't I plan for what can go wrong because everything initially goes wrong. I've been there, done that, been a farmer a long time, certified organic farmer, and I know that you got to have a certain attitude and certain mindset to be able to be patient enough when you're making mistakes to learn from them instead of being frustrated and folding it all in and walking away from it. You can't do that. Have a nice day, Luann.
Okay.
I'm now we got two things to do, and we don't have enough time, so Elizabeth, I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts until our next show. Let's go over and go to France and say hello to Martin Barnes. Martin Barnes is the public relations chairperson for the Canadian organization Rethinking AIDS. And in 2000, Martin's girlfriend turned up HIV positive. It was like throwing a bomb into his life. He moved to France and discovered Professor Henny Bauer's book about AIDS and realized he was a victim of the biggest medical mistake in the history of medicine. He worked with Christian Maggiore and the experts at Rethinking AIDS to write and publish the brochure, The AIDS Trap, illustrated by R. Crumb, which now appears in several languages. Nice to have you with us today, Martin.
Yes, hi, Gary.
Martin, what we're dealing with today is the official story that AIDS is caused by a single virus. It can manifest as 30 different syndromes. The only way you're going to know if you have the virus is you have to get an antibody test. If it shows you're positive, then you're going to die. You just don't know how long it's going to take, but you then must immediately put time on your side by taking drugs, AZT, protease inhibitors, DDI, DDC, all these drugs. And if you want to know which drugs to take, then you can go to different organizations, and there are hundreds of different drugs out there. And then if you take the drugs, then you have a chance of slowing down the progression, but no one's ever been cured. You want to hope that there's a vaccine, but they've had 57 separate vaccines, trials, all of which have failed.
Yeah.
But we're sure that the next time there is a walk for AIDS or a bike for AIDS, that you'll see Tom Hanks or you'll see Sharon Stone or Bono or someone out there who's all supportive of the existing paradigm. The trouble is, none of that is real. Tell us where orthodox medicine, the mainstream media, our policymakers, our scientists and physicians, our activists and age groups have all got it wrong. The forum is yours.
Now, the interesting thing is that there is a group of very competent scientists all along that have been challenging what they're saying about AIDS. When they very first started out in the mid-1980s, they came up with this idea that this syndrome called AIDS was caused by a virus. But right away, people started saying, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. But once they decided it was caused by a virus, then, wow, all the virologists got lots of funding to go after this virus. And then the pharmaceutical company said, wow, let's create some drugs to try to stop this virus. And then they figured out, well, let's we can do these measures, and we can say, oh, aha, we're measuring how the virus is going down. Well, none of it really correlated with how healthy the people were. The interesting thing is that, like you said, Gary, they used this seropositivity test, the AIDS test, to say, you take the test and say, uh-oh, you're positive. And all of a sudden, the person just freaks out. Recently, I saw an email that three sisters in India measured HIV positive, and they all committed suicide. It turns out that this test doesn't even measure a virus. What it is a series of proteins that happen when you're you say if you take a vaccine shot, you're infected with some other disease or some other problem. Your immune system kind of goes into overdrive, and wow, you've got these antibodies in there. Even if you're pregnant, you have them in there. And all of a sudden, boom, the test comes out positive. The doctor says, you know, holds you by the hand and says, I'm sorry, you test positive. You better start taking these drugs. Well, it turns out that people don't really realize that the test itself isn't very good, and that there's as many as 60 different conditions that can bring on a positive result. So a lot of this just isn't very well known by the public. And it turns out that this whole thing that they've sort of invented, you know, is just causing a huge amount of damage. Even the way in which they define AIDS. Now, AIDS is a serious problem. If your immune system goes down, you are sick. Okay, this is bad news. But it turns out that was caused by toxins, usually. The people who actually have AIDS turn out to be intravenous drug users. And people who are taking a lot of antibiotics to try to stop serial infections, your immune system goes down, and, uh-oh, you can have AIDS. But we've asked for the scientific proof that this syndrome of the immune system going down is caused by a virus, and no one can seem to come up with it. So it's fascinating to me that, I am a volunteer for a group called Rethinking AIDS, but it's a scientific organization. The board of directors is made up of doctors and PhD scientists and virologists. They're all saying, hey, this whole AIDS thing is a scam, okay? These are very competent people. Why hasn't this gotten any publicity? You know, right now...
let me just interject here, Martin.
Sure.
We're speaking with Martin in France, and I guess he's on a Skype phone or something. No one is denying AIDS-defining illnesses. Those are real. I've helped at least 1,000 people who have AIDS-defining illnesses to recover their health in varying degrees, and some to be totally cured, and they've been on PBS television on at least 11 occasions. Plus, we've held press conferences. That's not in dispute. What is in dispute is that a single virus is what's causing these, and the treatments are what we should be using, when the number one cause of death in people with AIDS is liver failure, and liver failure is not one of the 30 conditions, therefore liver failure is from the drugs. So the drugs are causing more people with AIDS to die, and they're in complete denial of this. But all you have to do is look at the fact that the media will never challenge anything that's official. So if you have dozens of official foundations and dozens of official agencies and dozens of scientists within those official organizations and dozens of medical organizations saying that it's official, then no one will ever challenge that. Therefore, the pipeline of money, hundreds of billions of dollars, is going to keep flowing, even though when you look at who's really getting the AIDS, then and today, it's fast-track gays using lots of drugs, multiple sexually infected diseases, hepatitis, herpes 6, and cytomegalovirus, etc. And then you also have the regular drug users. Now, because I was head of drug interdiction at Trafalgar Hospital and the Institute of Applied Biology, I work 1,000 drug addicts, including during this period, and I saw that the people who would normally be diagnosed with, you know, cirrhosis of the liver or some form of disease, hepatitis, because of the drugs, the moment they tested with low T cell counts or the moment they got an antibody test for AIDS, now it was AIDS. It was no longer their lifestyle. And that's where I saw the politicalization for economic interest in this whole subject of AIDS. Now, for those of you listening on WMYE and our other stations, you can continue listening to this conversation by going to progressiveradionetwork.com or GaryNall.com. My guest is Martin Barnes. The website is theaidstrap.com, theaidstrap.com, for more on this. Martin, back to you.
Yeah. Yes, it's interesting that in the mid-80s and early 90s, as many as 300,000 people were poisoned to death by the AIDS medicines themselves. In other words, they came up with, there's just a panic. Oh, my God, I'm HIV. I've got this virus inside me. I've got to have the meds. And so the doctors give, And so there's this one medicine called AZT, and they just overdosed it. They overprescribed it. They'll admit it now. Oh, sorry, we made a mistake. We just, gave the medication. It was just too heavily prescribed.
1,400 to 1,600 milligrams a day. They were taking it four times a day. Today, any doctor giving you that amount would lose their license. But hundreds of thousands were taking it and dying like flies.
Yeah. And now the general public thinks, oh, this was AIDS. Every people died from AIDS, or they died from HIV. And no one knows about this.
No, they died from the treatment.
It's a huge medical mistake.
Yes, and nobody wants to acknowledge it. But then again, Martin, they do not acknowledge that more Americans die each year from medical mistakes than were killed in the First and Second World Wars combined of American casualties. My last question to you, Martin, who are some of the newer scientists who are on board now that we know that there are over 1,600 famous scientists and journalists and medical doctors, including multiple Nobel Prize winners, professor emeritus at different universities, heads of virology department. These are heavyweight academics. They've read the literature. They're on board now challenging the whole AIDS paradigm because they know the truth and are speaking out, but the mainstream media will not touch them. The left media will not touch them. No one is getting giving them a form. Who are some of the new people?
Yeah, well, if you go to the virology department in Italy, in the University of Firenze, there you'll find a hotbed of people that, like the whole Italian system, they don't buy into this entire system that the Americans have. They don't treat AIDS with heavy duty. You know, if you're HIV positive, they don't take it seriously. In other words, in Europe, they're beginning to wake up about this whole thing.
And treat you for your actual underlying medical conditions.
Right.
That in the absence of HIV diagnosis will be treated as tuberculosis, malnutrition, thrust, pneumocystis, cranial pneumonia, Kaposi's sarcoma, etc.
Gary, I wanted to ask you, the Rethinking AIDS Board has asked me to investigate the idea of organizing a boycott of HIV tests.
I agree with that.
It turns out these tests are like really bad. It's the place where the whole paradigm is most vulnerable. And if people were to realize that these HIV tests really don't test for a virus, what do you think? Do you think it's something that we could pull off? And if so, you know, how should we go about it?
I definitely believe that that's the case because people just routinely get their HIV test, not even aware sometimes they're getting an HIV test. And we should protest this and bring the science up and show them the hard quality scholarly science that the HIV antibody test does not test for the virus, and the package inserts on the test to state that. And false positives are common. If you have herpes, if you have malaria, if you've had tuberculosis, even pregnancy and arthritis can test you positive. Think how many lives they've wrecked, all so that it creates another profit stream.
Yeah, lives are being destroyed. You know, we're going to have a conference in Washington, D.C., December 1st. The Rethinking AIDS group is going to have a big conference.
Well, we will give you more promotion on that when it gets close to that time. But yes, Martin, I definitely feel that there should be a national pushback against mandatory or even voluntary testing of the HIV virus by antibody test because it's completely non-scientific. Martin, we're out of time for you. Thank you very much for being on.
Okay, thanks, Gary.
More, and he's in France. More on that coming up. In studio is Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello, Gary.
And the moments we have left, let's take one of your questions at least.
Yeah, so we've got some very conscientious people emailing in these days. Al Gore has blasted Obama. Someone sent an article on climate change.
From Rolling Stone.
Right, for failing to take bold action. But the question is, why has it taken Al Gore all this time to blast anyone? And why have the environmental movement not done anything?
Well, because they're one and the same. Remember the original Kyoto Agreement that America refused to sign and the anti-landmine treaty that we refused to sign?
Right.
That was because the Clinton White House, where Al Gore was vice president, was pro-corporation. Therefore, under the Clinton administration, over 63 separate environmental measures were engaged in that honored the people who wanted to take over mining and tearing down forest and strip mining in Kentucky and Tennessee, the tops of mountains, and weakening the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act. All that was done under the Clinton-Gore White House. So what people don't appreciate and why I voted for Ralph Nader is, gee whiz, why are you voting not for a Democrat? Because it's not a Democrat. It's a corporatist. Just be honest about it. So Al Gore today is worth hundreds of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions, but so is Bill Clinton worth over $100 million. That should tell you something about where you make your money. Now, he did, to his credit, he made a good movie, An Inconvenient Truth, and I respect that. But I want to see, why isn't he, you know, why didn't he give up the farm where they were growing tobacco and he was getting subsidies and then growing beef? And why didn't he go 100% solar? Why was he still flying on private jets? There's a lot of contradictions within the man. That does not mean I feel that there's not a lot he's doing right. There is a lot he's doing right. But I believe that he, if you're going to come out strong. come out and show that Obama is a corporatist. Ron Emanuel worked for the largest nuclear energy company in the United States, and David Axelrod as well. And that's why Obama got all that campaign contribution. The largest amount from any of the energy companies came from nuclear. And hence he's pro-nuclear. Now he's trying to sell us that nuclear is clean and renewable and safe and effective. It's none of the above. He should have come out against that. So now Al Gore has a chance to come forward and state the entire environmental movement has betrayed the American people and has betrayed the environmental movement. Now, I suggest people go up on YouTube, download the speech that I gave this year on Soltis at the UN. I was invited to be the keynote speaker.
Right.
And you'll see the whole ringing of the bell, and that was a beautiful ceremony. But then in front of all these environmentalists, I got up there, and I really challenged them for what have you done? They accept money from major corporations, and now they're making money, and everyone's making a nice salary, and they got nice offices, but what did you do?
Right.
You haven't done anything. When was the last time Al Gore chained himself, you know, with the people like Dr. Hansen from NASA down when they were strip mining and causing all the pollution from the coal trailings? He hasn't. You know, it's very easy to be a Keith Olbermann and sit behind a desk. Go out and get yourself arrested. Go out and protest. Have a march on Washington about what's wrong with our environment and the corruption of the Koch brothers and the science, the faulty and fraudulent science they try to promote in denying global warming. Now, I support Al Gore and all the good things he's doing. I just wish that he would do it more and come out swinging and establish himself. He wants to kind of have it both ways, be a corporatist and benefit from all the ways you can make money off the environmental movement, but not really go after the people who are the major polluters who are also the people giving money to the environmental movement.
Yeah.
See, the corporations have learned the two foundations and other ways you can infiltrate the environmental movement, and that means that they're not likely to go after you. So if you give $10 million or $5 million to an environmental foundation, then you are not going to be up high on their charts of people we should go after, corporations we should challenge, and legislation we should seek. They'll find another, you know, another target. So in effect, corporate America has compromised the environmental movement, much of it, much like the Supreme Court allow Citizens United to buy politicians and corrupt that system. We've got to stop the pimping of the environmental movement.
Right.
All right? So Al Gore has a moment in time to say how bad it really is and what we need to do to change. We need a whole new, brand new leadership within the environmental movement. We need new, young, idealist, progressive minds who are not going to be compromised, who are not looking for cushy jobs, who are not looking to how they can commercialize their going from their position in environmental movement and then into corporate America. We need idealism once again that we once had.
Right.
And I hope that Al Gore has the strength, the character, and the courage to help lead that movement. He certainly has the tools to do so, and I'm glad that he did this article in Rolling Stone. Good for him. I commend Al Gore for doing this article in Rolling Stone, and I commend him for calling out Obama. It's time that some leading policy-making and opinion-leading Democrats called out Obama. It's important that the poor and those who have suffered and believe that Barack Obama would be there for them, they got to see the man for what he is and pull back that support and look for people who will be running who truly are for them. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
And thank all of you for watching. I'm Gary Noll. Have a nice day.
Is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.